Welcome to the CSUSB Advising Podcast. Join us as we bring you the latest advising updates at Cal State San Bernardino. Each episode is specifically made for you, the CSUSB students and parents. We provide you advising tips, interviews with both CSUSB campus resources and those in academic advising. Sit back and enjoy. Go Yotes!
Hey, Yotes! Welcome to our CSUSB Advising Podcast. We are so excited that you're joining us, listening in. We have amazing guests that will be joining us to share information. Hey, Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing, if you know what I mean. I'm tired. I'm probably sure you're tired. We're at finals week now, and I know our Yotes have been studying, getting their papers done, working super hard to finish strong this semester.
Absolutely. We want to encourage you to make sure self-care, take care of yourself so that way you could take care of things that you need to handle like finals week. So Matt, what's going on this episode?
Yeah, so it's finals. So speaking of finals, we have John Noriega, an academic advisor who we both know and work with in advising and academic services. And he's going to give us some extra study tips. He's going to talk about the winter intersession and help us to get ready for the spring 2021 semester. So let's dive right in. Right, first up to go is the wonderfully talented John Noriega. John has worked at CSUSB since 2012, starting out as a program assistant for retention projects, a peer advisor in advising and academic services, intern for orientation, then as an academic services specialist in athletics, a testing coordinator in the testing center, then a transfer and graduation counselor in the office of the registrar, and currently back in advising and academic services as an academic advisor. John is our go-to, and he works on many projects and programs within the office, including the 2 and 4 year graduation pledge programs and finals week encouragement. John, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Thanks again for joining us, John. So it's finals week this week, and I'm sure that as students are listening in, it'll be about that time they're studying hard. What advice would you give our students? And can you let us know a little bit more about what finals week encouragement is?
Yeah, I mean, finals can always be a stressful time. We've all been through that experience before, even as students ourselves. Ultimately, with finals, one of the tips that I do want to recommend students is always having at least enough time to gather their materials to make sure that they have everything ready to start preparing and to start studying. Ultimately, with our courses being fully online right now, one of the best things that any student can do is to combine all of their notes, their PowerPoints, all of their notes that they've taken over the past 15 weeks to combine everything together into one file. And that would just be like a quick reference guide for them to refer to any question that they might have that could potentially pop up on an exam or a quiz during finals week. Now, definitely don't want to encourage students to just solely rely on their notes, especially when some other exams are going to be timed. But it is a good way to use all of their notes, PowerPoints, their study guides, to combine them all into one file and to use that to ultimately study for their exams. Because quite frankly, with the exams being timed, they want to make sure that they master that information, they know it, and they'll be ready to answer that question once they see it. One other thing too is to balance out their time. When you're on the exam, you probably have like an hour for your exam, maybe a little bit more than that. Be mindful that if you're stuck on a question, don't spend too much time on it. You know, move on to the next question. You know, you don't want to get stuck on that time and then, you know, not be able to answer some of your questions later on in your exam. You know, ultimately, those are a few tips that I think students can take away when they're on their taking their final exams. But most importantly, other than just the knowledge and retaining that information, it's also being mindful of your own personal and mental health. So, you know, getting enough sleep, eating well during that time, as you are already feeling that stress and that anxiety, you don't want to let that take away some of the time that you can have to rest, you know, before the night of an exam, or, you know, to eat well before an exam and, you know, not feel lightheaded or feel tired or fatigued, you know. So definitely take care of yourself, have that balance between, you know, your nights of sleep, eating well before an exam, staying hydrated ultimately too, you know, drinking a lot of water. But ultimately, taking care of yourself is one important tip that I think students can take away from that, at least for their final exams. Finals week encouragement is that is an event that we always hold at least a week prior to final exams. Prior to everything that has happened in the world with the pandemic, we used to have in-person events where we would give out Scantrons, goodies, referring students to resources on campus, wishing them the best of luck on their final exams, and sharing some tips and exchanging some information with them. Because everything is now fully online and virtual, we've been able to convert some of this finals week encouragement over to an online format where we are now communicating with students via email, sharing those resources and informing them about the things that they could still take advantage of even during finals week. But also wishing them luck on our end here in our office, wishing them the best of luck and making sure that they are staying safe and staying well, and making sure that they're going to do well on their examinations. So, finals week, ultimately, we do have this event usually in person, but right now it's being held virtually online due to the pandemic.
Yeah. And recently an email was sent out about the grade policy changes for the fall 2020 semester. So our current semester that we're ending real soon. Now, we've had questions from students that might be a little bit confused with what this grade policy is and what options they actually have to choose from. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. So with the grading policy, it was to a surprise. I know we offered this opportunity for grading policies back in spring. Now we're offering it again in the fall. Students will ultimately have the option or the power to select whichever grading scale they prefer to have for their classes. And they could do that all through their My Coyote portal up until December 5th, I want to say, because after the 5th, they're going to need to request permission to change that. But ultimately, a student could go into My Coyote and select one of three options. They can select the regular grading basis, which is any grade between an A through D minus. Keeping in mind that no student will be issued an F grade. The F grades will be converted to no credits. Therefore, no credit won't carry any grade point value to your GPA. And the second option could be anything between an A through C or no credit, or the student can opt in for a credit or no credit. Credit and no credit just basically means a pass or fail. You either pass the course, you might have gotten like a C minus or better, and you didn't want the C minus on there, so you opted in for a credit instead. Or if you did not pass the class with a C minus or better, you got a D minus, that would automatically go into a no credit grade. Just with the grading policy, we do highly advise students to just check with an advisor to make sure that the grading scale that they would rather choose wouldn't affect them down the line with like graduate school, with certificate programs, because those are things that they want to be mindful of, especially if they do require a specific grade for a program. Those are the things that we would be extra careful with. But if a student is doing pretty well in their classes, they're not really stressing so much about their grades, they're doing okay, then I personally would still recommend that they keep the regular graded option for now, without having to, worry about the credit or no credit policy.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this is being posted during finals week. So the deadline for students to actually go in and make that change has passed, but students can still possibly petition, right?
They can. So they're actually going to go into My Coyote and click on their student center. They'll be able to go where the menu is on academics. There will be an option that says permission, request, change grading scale. And once they go in there, they will be able to submit a petition to change the grading scale even after the deadline. That petition will go directly to the Office of the Registrar for approval. And that will allow the registrar to process that change of grade, whether the student wishes to go from a graded basis to a credit or no credit, or revert back to that if they switched it from credit or no credit back to a letter grade. So students will still be given that option to still submit that petition even after the deadline.
And if students have questions about, like, well, which option should I choose? Who could they go to get help with that?
Yeah, and that's going to be a very good thing that they do check in with someone before they do submit that request. Definitely their academic advisor would be the go-to for that. They can definitely visit their My Coyote Center to see who their advisor is. There's a box that will indicate who their program advisor is. And if they want to set up an appointment with their advisor, the contact information will be available on there as well. But we do encourage them to still see an advisor, to speak with an advisor before they make that change on the grading scale basis.
Thank you for that information, John. So winter intersession, that is during the winter break, of course. Can you please provide some information? If students are not registered for winter intersession, can they still register? We all know that students have a max of 4 units that they can take during winter intersession. It is only 15 days. So can you let us know if students can still register?
Yeah, so winter intersession registration began on November 9th. So starting in midnight on November 9th, students were able to go in and register for winter intersession. Going back to what you mentioned, the maximum amount of units is 4 units. So ultimately, this is only going to be one class that a student can take. A few students have inquired about that, is why the limit of the 4 units. And that is because winter intersession is a very fast-paced term. So it's a 3-week instruction term with 1 week of finals. So, you know, taking more than one class would probably be a little too much. But the one class that they would be able to enroll in would only be either 3 to 4 units. The winter intersession does begin on December 18th. That's going to be the first day of winter classes. And the last day to add classes over My Coyote would be December 17th. So in case if a student wishes to add a class for winter intersession, they will require the signature of the instructor and the signature of the department chair starting on December 18th. So, if the student is still trying to look into, like, you know, classes for the winter intersession, there is a very limited amount of sections that are still open for that session. Most of them are mostly like GEs or some courses in the major, but students could still technically add those classes up until the 17th of December.
And then aside from winter, there's also spring semester that'll be starting in January, and students have also been registering for the spring term classes. Now, some students might have been registering and found that some of the classes were already full or might have a waitlist option. How does the waitlist option actually work?
Yeah, good question. So usually the student can see if the class is waitlisted if they uncheck the box in My Coyote that says show open classes only. That tends to be a detail that students tend to oversee when they're searching for classes because it's defaulted to show only open classes. So if you are looking for classes and you are trying to figure out whether a class is waitlisted or not, please be sure to uncheck the box that says show open classes only. That will bring up the list of all of the classes that are currently open, closed, but also waitlisted. If you do happen to see a class that is waitlisted, you'll usually see a yellow clock icon that says waitlisted on there. And if you're interested in waitlisting for a class, all you have to do is select the course. And on the next screen, there will be a checkbox that says check if class is full or waitlist if class is full. Once you do that, you check the box, move to the next page, put it in your shopping cart, continue with the enrollment process. By the time that you enroll into the waitlist, it will give you a position number that says, you know, you're in position number 5, position number 4 on the waitlist. The waitlist is an automated process. So you basically, depending on the available seats in the class, if a seat happens to open up, you're going to move up on that wait list, and it happens overnight. So you don't actually have to keep checking all the time to see if you're in the class or not to enroll, because the system will automatically enroll you into the class upon availability. The one thing I do recommend is that you double check prerequisites to make sure that you've met the prerequisites for the class, and that you also double check for the amount of units that you're enrolled in, because if you are enrolled in 18 units already and you try to add the class, or the system tries to add the course that's waitlisted, you're going to get an error message that says you were not able to register because of the amount of units that you have on your class schedule. And then the third thing is to double check to make sure that the course that you're trying to enroll in that is waitlisted doesn't conflict with any of your other classes on your schedule, because that tends to be an issue that could happen, that it won't enroll you unless, you know, you don't have any time conflicts. The waitlist will be open up until the first day of classes. You're able to go ahead and still remain on the waitlist up until the first day of classes. Now, if for whatever reason you are unable to get into the class by the first day of classes, there is that additional process that a student can go through, which is the permission request. And the student can submit a petition to add through that. That's also available in your student center. And it's called permission request, enrollment request, and then you'll be able to submit that. It will send the request over to the instructor and department chair of the class for approval. And if they approve, you would be added into the course as well.
And John, if students have any advising related questions, whom would they be able to contact? Can you provide that information for our listeners?
Yeah, if a student still has any questions, they are still unsure of who to reach or who to contact. I know, especially right now with, you know, everything being online, it's kind of hard to come in contact with somebody, if it's even by phone or in person. A student can reach out to our advising email or general advising email at advising@csusb.edu. And we have our amazing team that is checking, you know, Monday through Friday, checking those emails, answering them in a timely manner. And rest assured that they'll be able to get back to you on any general questions that you may have, or refer you to the appropriate office that will be able to provide that answer for you.
Well, John, we've reached the end of the interview. Thank you so much for joining us. And Yodis, hopefully you got a lot of great information out of this, some wonderful tips about finals week to still prep for it as you're finishing up those finals, some information about the grade policy changes, as well as the winter intersession, and as well as spring semester starting. John, thanks again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, John, for that information. Best to you, Yodis. Best on your final. Study hard and make sure you get some rest. So up next, we have Natalie Cleary from Student Affairs, and she will be covering a lot of information that you may need to know about basic skills. So here you go. Enjoy. Hey, Yodis, and welcome. Oh, my goodness. We are getting to finals week, and we're almost done with this term. So I wanted to introduce our next amazing guest here that we have with us per this episode, Natalie Cleary. So Natalie has been our basic needs coordinator for the past year, beginning September 19th, and she has been with the university for going on 20 years. She has been in capacities and positions within student affairs, beginning at the student services with disabilities and working her way up. So we wanted to welcome Natalie Cleary. Welcome, Natalie, and thank you so much for your time and being able to join us here for our CSUSB Advising Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, Natalie, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll jump right into our questions. And the first one is, what is basic needs, and when did this service become available to students?
So basic needs really focuses on four different areas. It focuses on food insecurity, housing security, financial wellness and financial security, as well as just general wellness for students. CSUSB has had in some part a basic needs program to help assist students, especially with food insecurity, since about 2015 under the Office of Community Engagement, where the original kind of food pantry opened on campus. But we have really evolved over the last 5 years to expand those services to include all of those areas of basic needs. So including housing, that financial wellness piece, and then working with the health center on physical and mental wellness for students. And really, it's an initiative that's system-wide. So all the campuses in the CSU have a basic needs area, and it's supported by the chancellor's office as an initiative for all students within the CSU.
This is really cool, and thank you so much for sharing that, Natalie. You are the first, right? The first basic needs coordinator, and I know this is CSU-wide. So can you tell us how students can take advantage of these services per your department?
Yeah, I am the first basic needs coordinator, so super excited to be the first person in this position to really build the program. As I said, CSUSB has had a food pantry in some capacity since 2015, and then we got the Obershaw Den, which was really a designated space with support from the Obershaw family. And students, that's really one of our premier services. But in order to really grow and expand the program, we needed somebody to be in charge of it, really. And so that's really where my position came in developing more ways for students to access services and provide. There's been a lot of research done within the CSU since 2016. And really what it's showing, the numbers are so indicative of what our students are going through system-wide, statewide in California, especially because of the cost of living. And really that's that about 40% of all students in the CSU, 37% for CSUSB, identify as food insecure. And it's not just about how much food students have, it's about the quality of food too, not just the quantity. So not just do you have food, enough food to eat, but are you eating food that's healthy and nutritious for you? Or are you making decisions to compromise those things because you can't afford maybe to buy the fruits and vegetables and fresh products that you would like that are more healthy and that are going to lend itself to you being a healthier person and able to put that energy into studying and graduating, really?
Yeah, definitely. And I guess the follow-up to that is, do students have to become eligible in order to take advantage of the basic needs service?
So no, students, the only thing a student has to do to receive services in basic needs is to come to the department or reach out to our department. We ask students to identify themselves by their Coyote ID number. So just with many other offices on campus, we ask that they check in using their Coyote ID number. But our food pantry located here in San Bernardino and in Palm Desert, because we also have a food pantry at the Palm Desert campus now. The students just have to show. They don't have to show their income to qualify. They just need to come in and provide their student ID number. Emergency housing gets a little bit more complicated because that's going to be based on specific situations. For example, we currently have emergency housing available on San Bernardino's campus. So that's a challenge for students at Palm Desert because it's located at San Bernardino, but also if a student has a family. So we may have to work through alternatives. So most services are free and available to all students, but sometimes depending on individual circumstances, we have to assess whether or not what service is appropriate, like, for example, with the emergency housing. We also have a basic needs grant program, and so that may vary based on the student situation, you know, what grants they would qualify for. We have multiple different grant programs as well. But in general, all of our services are open to all students.
That is awesome. And thank you so much for sharing that. I know our next question was going to be how students can take advantage of the resources. And you mentioned basic needs, but it seems like, you know, basic needs meaning not just food insecurities, financial. Can you expand a little about that? I know you had mentioned it already, housing, financial. So students just reaching out to you. Are there any other services that's tied to basic needs that your office provides students?
Sure. So to give a little breakdown, so we cover food insecurity, and that's done in a multiple ways. So one of those is our food pantries on both campuses. The second would be we participate in what's called the Swipe Out Hunger Program. So that program really is working with our dining services. So Yodi Eats, to make sure that students who want meals in the Coyote Commons can get access to those. And that's a small application that students do to indicate they would like to participate in the program. And we allot them so many meals in the Coyote Commons for them to use. And it's a really cool program because it's give a meal and get a meal. So students who have meal plans, or faculty and staff, for example, that have meal plans, can actually donate to the program in their recirculate their unused, if you will, meal swipes in the Coyote Commons. We also provide grocery gift cards to students who may have like dietary issues, or families with young children, for example, need special diets because of medical reasons that we won't be able to accommodate in our food pantry. So we work through that issue with students. Right now during COVID, students that don't have transportation to maybe come to campus, we've been sending out small gift cards to local grocery stores for them as well, so that we can still assist with them being able to secure some food items. So those are kind of the ways that we work with food insecurity. And the last piece of that is our CalFresh outreach program. So for students who have long-term food insecurity issues and need consistent help and may qualify for county benefits of CalFresh, we're able to help students walk through that process. And so those are all our services under food insecurity, if you will. Then we have our housing insecurity program, and that really centers around students who are displaced or homeless. And so I really work in conjunction with Jesse Juarez, who is our campus homeless student liaison, and he's our care case manager through the care department. And so him and I work with and do a full assessment of a student who presents. Either we get a referral because a student has indicated they're homeless, let's say from a faculty, staff, or other staff member of the campus community. And then they actually, once we kind of assess where their situation's at, we determine, is emergency housing on campus a good placement for them? Do we need to assist? We've assisted students with hotel stays during displacement or times of homelessness. We work with also community agencies. So, is there a community agency that we may be able to link this student up with? You know, there are lots of programs for homeless veterans, for domestic violence situations, if they were displaced for that reason. You know, although it's very, very individualized when we're talking about housing. Then through our financial wellness program, we have grant programs. So students through our website can apply for our basic needs grant. So an example of that would be, let's say a student has an unpaid medical bill that they don't have insurance, or they have a dental bill because they don't have dental insurance and needed to get dental work done. That type of unexpected expense, they would be able to apply for a mini grant, really, that covers basic needs. To help with some of those costs, because we know that, right, if students are facing food insecurity, housing, financial insecurity, the stress of that impacts academic success. And that's really the basis of our program. Our emergency grants are available to students through an application-based process, and we have a review committee that reviews requests and determines, based on the need, the amount to allocate for students. But that could also go towards a student who maybe needs help with first month's rent or deposit. You know, you have to do first and last month's rents when you're trying to get a new place. That might be the case, or a transportation issue. We had students who received the grant this year because they were in a car accident and needed to pay their deductible. And, you know, it was outside of what they can normally do. And normally, when non-COVID, they're coming to campus, so they need their car. And so we know that that makes a difference. And then with wellness, we partner with, again, the health center, counseling center, and care team to make sure that the students are well and have access to medical, mental health, counseling services, community resources, and referrals. So we do a lot of community referrals as well with our partners.
And so with that, we're recording this interview, and it's going to be posted during finals week. Are these services going to be available in between the fall semester ending and the spring semester starting?
Yeah, we will continue to work it out of the food pantry. The both pantries will be open. So in San Bernardino, that's in Faculty Office Building 237. So we're in Little Faculty Office Building next door to the library. Most students don't know that. They always ask where that building is because there's not classes in it. And so we will continue to be open. We're currently open 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday for open pantry hours. And that information is available on our basic needs website, but we will continue to be open through up until December 23rd, and then we'll take the break that the university does when the university is closed, and then we'll be back serving students again in January during the intersession and obviously spring term.
That is awesome, and thank you so much for sharing that. So Natalie, if I know that you guys are on social media, let's say if a student would like to contact your office, what's the best way to do so? I know that via your social media, you have live sessions. Let's say a student would like to contact you regarding the resources. What's the best way that they can contact you?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different ways. One is to follow us on social media. We're very active on Instagram, and it's just CSUSB Basic Needs is our social media handle, and we always post up-to-date information, and we do a lot of Instagram lives, as you indicated, on our programs and services. So that's a great way. The other way is to email our department. We have an email that is basicneeds@csusb.edu. And that goes to myself as well as some of our lead students in our team so that we can try and get back to as many students as quickly as possible. And then they can always reach out to me. I'm in the campus directory, Natalie Cleary. You can look at my information. I have my phone forwarded right now to my cell phone. So a lot of students catch me off guard, even sometimes when they call after hours. We want to make sure that we're accessible to students, even while we're during this virtual environment. So, reach out via email to me at basicneeds@csusb.edu or follow us on social media. Just a final thought that a lot of students struggle with whether or not to ask for help in this area, that there's always a stigma around basic needs. And maybe if they're struggling with housing or food, they don't want to tell anybody. And we run into a lot of students. Sometimes when I meet with students, I ask them about their housing and they're like, well, I mean, I'm not homeless. I'm like, well, where do you send your mail? And they're like, well, I really don't have an address. I kind of stay with my friend. We call it couch surfing, right? I stay with my friends a couple days here, yeah. And then, a family member a couple days here. And, that's great. Students are being resourceful, but is that the best environment to be successful in when you're kind of in this unstable, not sure where you're going to stay every night? And so really just, again, coming back to that area that these services were intended to help students, because we know that this is an issue, not only at CSUSB, but statewide with college students. It's expensive in California, especially in urban areas like Los Angeles area, San Francisco, San Diego area. And so a lot of students are struggling with this. So if we can get the message out there that you're not the only one and we are here to help you, there's no judgment or stigma around that service. 37% of students are facing food insecurity. That means, one in three are. And so you are definitely not alone in that struggle, and don't, hesitate to take advantage of these services.
That is amazing. And thank you so much again, Natalie. Yodis, I hope that you have the information that you need for basic needs. If you have any questions, please reach out to Natalie and her team. And again, Natalie, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Natalie. Make sure that you do follow Basic Needs, their social media handle. Natalie just provided you with her information of how to connect with them. And again, so Yodis, thank you again for tuning in with us this fall semester. As you know, this is our last episode for this term. We hope that you get to join us next month, January, as we begin our new series and new episodes for the spring 2021. We hope that you are well. Take care, Yodis.